I believe more or less food is the answer to every problem.
Meine Lieben, es ist soweit. René Redzepi vom Noma ist heute mein Gast und wir steigen gleich ein mit dem World Rap. So 10 little questions from of a World Rap and then we start talking about the important stuff.
Super.
The Alps or the sea?
The sea.
Yeah, of course. A QR code manual, yes or no?
As opposed to a regular manual?
Yes, you have to scan it to see what's on the menu. So you have
No.
Meaning you have to use your phone.
I thought you said manual. You said menu.
No, menu. A QR code menu.
No, definitely a menu. Old school.
Old school.
Yeah.
Go fishing or pick herbs?
Pick herbs.
A natural wine or a non-alcoholic pairing?
Oof.
Your personal preference. Let's say today. Natural wine.
Yeah.
Ananas on a pizza, yes or no?
For me to know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't judge people if they want.
Mm-hmm. Music at the mise en place or silence?
No music.
Music?
Mm-hmm.
What's more important, you think, a spoon or a fork?
Equal.
Equal?
Yeah, yeah. It's a tie.
Street food in Asia or a Michelin star restaurant in Europe?
Woo! This might be controversial. I'm going to go for street food.
The street food?
Yeah.
A little bit controversial as well. 50 best or Guide Michelin?
It's very hard to answer that because we are sitting here doing this podcast because of the 50 best.
Yes, you think so?
100%. Mm-hmm. Rasmus Munk has just been here.
Mm-hmm.
All this comes from Noma being 50 best at one point, being number one. But so I'm incredibly grateful to what is done to us. But in terms of what matters mostly for me, it's the Michelin guide.
Mm-hmm.
But what matters mostly for your business, it's the 50 best.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And maybe it's changed today. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We've been out of the game for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I grew up, I was 15 when I started in a kitchen. And I'm 48 now. So at that time, I had 10, 15 years where it was the only thing you could dream of was getting a Michelin star. It used to be like that.
How hard was it to be, for such a long time, such a hyped restaurant, and not having the 3 stars, but the 2 stars? Was it?
It was never a problem to me.
Okay.
I will tell anyone, I think it's better to be climbing.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, we were very young when we achieved success, but it's not necessarily the right way. So,
I see.
I never saw it as a problem. People made it into a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I was almost certain if we continued at one point we would get there.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I mean, we got it in the middle of the pandemic. You know,
it's true. Yeah.
But it was a wonderful year. We got 3 Michelin stars and we won number one again in the same year. It was a crazy year.
Yeah.
But it was just in the middle of the pandemic, so it was kind of like,
what is happening?
Yeah, and we went to the Michelin ceremony. There was nobody there. We were in this giant conference hall. Usually it's full of people.
Yeah.
And they couldn't have people. So we were alone on the stage, you know, walking up on stage and there's nobody in the whole room.
I think I saw pictures of this, but you didn't notice that there was any public in the room.
I mean, it's a conference room for 1,800 people. And there's 6 people on stage, that's it. And you're supposed to go out cheering.
Still, it's the stars that count.
But it was a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, was it still?
It was. Yeah. It still is. Every time that something positive happens, it's...
The last question of this World Rap, a vegan menu at Noma, yes or no?
Yes.
Yes.
Of course. Completely vegan. In the summer season, we are a vegetarian restaurant. And in the summer season, when we have a lot of vegetarians, we have like 15-20% of our guests are vegans.
Which was, let's now come to the real part of the podcast. which was quite interesting because I remember this was, I think, also during the pandemic 2020, where all of a sudden you draw a lot of criticism from, I think also from some not very like-minded chefs apparently, for the dish with the duck head. Mm-hmm. You were, some said, crossing the boundaries of creativity.
I didn't even know there was criticism, actually.
Yes, it was, because they were shocked of this duck head, which was so a little bit too... But
didn't with you, the brain in
with
it.
With the brain in it, exactly, the brain. And I think there also you replied once and said, actually, we use almost no meat. So why coming and making all this kind of criticism as if we were like animal slaughtering people?
Ah, because it was for game season.
Yes, it was the game season, exactly.
And we serve meat in a very specific period.
Yes.
When it's only wild meat, it's very controlled.
Yes.
We were, of course, getting wild ducks. We served everything from the duck, from the brain to the feet. Made sure to use everything, which I think if you choose to serve meat, that's a great way to do it. Mm-hmm. And why that was so controversial, I will never understand. I mean, I didn't realize it was that controversial, as you say. Sometimes you see something on Instagram. But,
yes, of
you
course.
Know,
I remember just back in the days, it was like something that was a little bit in my head because there was an important article about it somewhere in a good food media where
in the German one
in an American one, I think, which where the
honestly
where,
I haven't I can't even remember course, maybe but, I read it but
I'm also speaking from a journalist perspective,
sure.
So I have it maybe a little bit more in mind, but it was interesting that it was written. It shows that for people it becomes more and more important to know what they eat, to see actually what they eat is about, and I think this was a very nice analysis of
great. I mean, today it doesn't matter what you post on a social media or what there will be this long stretch of people commenting. A third will be great, a third will be neutral, and then a third they act as if they hate you, you mm-hmm. know, or mm-hmm. you do, or you've just done something that's the most evil thing on earth. Mm. It's the spirit of the times. Right now, the spirit of this moment.
Indignation on a specific moment, and then everybody forgets about it again.
That's also another thing. Mm. Nothing. It seems as if nothing matters because people are so upset.
Right.
And then they forget, and it's strange how to... And you're even a journalist, you know, so I couldn't imagine how it is to be in your shoes where... news, the latest story just flips every 30 minutes.
Yeah. And in
you feed a beast where nobody really remembers, nobody takes note.
Yeah.
It has to be incredibly controversial or scandalous before it sort of people stop and say, okay, let me read this fully.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's going to get worse.
Yes, it's not going to get
It's going to get worse.
It's not going to get
soon
better.
We're going to have all the fakes coming, you know?
Yeah.
So
speaking of this, there was this big announcement of Noma closing. Mm-hmm. But it's actually not closed.
No,
right?
Not yet.
Not yet.
So we will at the end of the year. And the next time we open up again will be in September of 2027.
In Copenhagen.
In Copenhagen. Because, of course, in between, we're going to have a pop-up in Los Angeles.
In LA, yes.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why this was delayed at first was because the fires in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this. There was terrible fires.
Yes, of course, now in spring 2025, right? Yes.
Yeah, terrible fires.
Yes.
And was it? This spring?
I think it was this spring, right?
No,
or was it
no,
already
no.
one year? Is it already 1 year
already
ago?
Already 1 year ago.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, because we were supposed to have been there this spring.
Okay, and the damages are still so important, so...
No, because the fire started happening, we thought the whole thing would be cancelled.
Okay.
And so we ended up just pushing it almost 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole closure thing started during the pandemic in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The first lockdown of the pandemic, I was thinking, like most people were in their home, trying to imagine what comes after this, after COVID. And I had all these questions that I had been dabbling with for many years, which is, where is all this leading us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, I was trying to figure out with myself, what is it that I truly enjoy about my work? And I know today that I enjoy to take part in creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that you do work that have a certain level of impact, positive mm-hmm. impact.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things, when I put them together and I try to imagine, and I don't know why this year came to be, but I imagine the year of 2070, which is a long way from now.
Yes.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I think it is crucial that people think long term. We are too stuck mm-hmm. in what's happening next year or the next year after mm-hmm. that. And we forget the long-term mission. So I was thinking long-term and I was trying to project myself as a 95, 60-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of person would I like to be? And what would I like Noma to be? And I saw a very creative enterprise that had impact and that worked with food. On the most creative level that had impact in all corners of food.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still active. That mm-hmm. was how mm-hmm. I was envisioning myself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you see that and you think to yourself, and you ask yourself, how we're working now, will that lead to that end goal? And that's where I could see that, okay, this will not happen. Because if you're working the way we have been for the last 22 years, which is you work every night.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm home 2 a.m. I have 3 kids. I wake up early. It's a very high-pressured business.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a business where you spend most of your time in production and very little time on creativity,
mm-hmm.
actually.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Because it's a low-paid business.
Yeah.
Margins are tight. We're all trying to survive year by year. And so it was like, okay, if we keep continuing like this, the amount I would like to spend on creativity is the reverse of what I'm doing. I'd like to spend 80% on creativity and 20% on actual production work.
Yeah.
And that's why we decided, okay, we have to make a change. If we want to be a creative enterprise that can last for another 30, 40 years and still have impact and be on the cutting edge,
mm-hmm.
we have to work in a different way. So we envisioned that we would turn Noma into this giant lab.
Noma Project was the name.
No, Noma Project got started because we needed, first of all, when you make this decision, you can see, okay, if we stop having a restaurant, we have no revenue. How do we pay the bill?
Exactly, because what you were saying now was actually you want to continue to do what you do, but actually, like very dumbly said, without a restaurant, more or less.
Yes.
Right?
Without a restaurant, but... Let me explain this.
Yeah, yeah.
Without a restaurant, but the thing is I like restaurant work,
mm-hmm.
but if you have 12 months of the year restaurant work...
Yes, that's it.
You don't have time for creativity
yes.
the way I want to.
Yes,
I see. I was trying to envision a model where restaurant work was where we had fun.
Mm.
It was like our lab mm-hmm. as opposed to a way of supporting ourselves. So to envision a new way to actually have revenue mm-hmm. and support your team in a way that is, you know, frankly impossible in today's food world.
Yes.
Do you know about the food world. People work a lot, they earn little. Most people burn out before they're 35.
Of course.
And so if you want to have an organization where people can thrive for a lifetime, they can have a car, a house, 3 kids, annual vacations, and you are a cook, a regular cook.
Mm-hmm.
Many, very, very few restaurants can have 60 employees like that. Maybe hotels can have them. But then your work goes into a little bit uninspiring type of work. So if you still want to be on the cutting edge. And so I was going through all these thinkings and I thought to myself, we have to change this, you know, and this means we have to shut the restaurant for large periods of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to think of projects that are unrelated to restaurant work, but related to food and creativity. And so whenever we open the restaurant in the future, it's going to be because we need to have a place where we are testing the ideas we're working on. So in Noma, and so Noma Projects was the place where we wanted to have revenue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
It's an outlet. It's where we sell our fermentations. If you have no restaurant revenue, where will your revenue go to pay for everything? So we started Noma Projects. It's hard. It's not working as well as we want it.
Okay.
For many reasons. First of all, pre-pandemic, after pandemic, online sales dropped like crazy.
Yeah.
Now there are great tariffs in America. So with each time, you know, when the tariffs got announced in America, our sales dropped with 50%.
About 50%?
Yeah.
Okay. Because this was the business model, right? To sell your products via online shop with the newsletter. And
that would pay for an entire restaurant team working on creativity.
With as much as staff as at the Noma restaurant, or with less staff?
With as much staff.
With as much staff. Yeah. All right.
So we have Noma Projects. That's where we sell our products.
Yes.
Then in Noma 3.0, we will have three major projects. One is scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's a long-term project that we're trying to fund. We've been working on this for more than a year and a half. It's a scientific project where we work on the future staples of food.
What does it mean?
So the staples today are wheat and corn and soybean and so on.
Yeah.
They feed 70% of all calories come from five crops in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Many people don't know this, but it's actually true.
Yeah.
It's a shocking amount from five crops.
It's shocking and fascinating at the same time.
And fascinating and also very dangerous. In a world that's changing, climate is changing, these crops are under pressure. So what else can we eat? And so we have four families of ingredients that we will be investigating. One is legumes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, soybeans are a legume.
Are a legume, yeah.
But there are so many more. Then there's fungi.
Mm-hmm.
There's we call them sea vegetables, not sea weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a huge family of sea plants.
Sea vegetables, you're talking about algae? Yes.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
A giant family of incredible potential.
Yes.
And then finally, it's bugs or insects.
Okay.
So our job here is to create deliciousness, to create new products and flavors and new ideas from these four families of ingredients.
These four families are the base. The basis.
Yes.
So to say. Okay.
That's where there is so much potential for flavor, for diversity, for ecological change, and things you can grow in large scale. Also, a lot of nutrition in them.
Hmm.
So that's one. That's a scientific project. Then we have one that's a nonprofit. In this case, it's a project with the UN on a new grain that's called Fonio. You probably never heard of it.
I never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Check it out. And it's also a very tasty grain. So we're trying to develop these new products around Fonio.
With the UN, which is funding this?
No. We are partnered with them, and then we have to go fund it. UN and us together. That's also an ongoing project. UN doesn't have a lot of money right now because of Trump as well.
Yeah.
But it's a partnership between us and them, and then we have to go fund the project. Then thirdly, it's a commercial project. In this case, it's we have the project. It's a first phase of hopefully a long project with a company that we are announcing soon.
That you are building. That you're...
No, we are. It's an already existing company that we will help create new things for.
Okay.
And it's not what you expect. It's not like we're going to be making a new type of pizza or yogurt. It's on a scientific level that it's like with yeast, mold, and bacteria, we will help a company. So
these comes the fermentation into play.
Yes. That is basically the some of the. the superpowers we have as Noma is flavor.
Yeah.
And then the knowledge and the creativity we've had over the last 22 years. If we take all of this, put it together with the network we have, and we decide to put it into practical use outside of the restaurant, I believe we can do a lot of great things. Then the idea with the, so we have these three projects, and then once a year we open for 3 months, and we will be testing everything we're working on for as a menu for the restaurant.
But now you're speaking not of the pop-ups, but of being open in Copenhagen?
Yes,
or,
yes. In Copenhagen. But each year in the future, we don't know when we're open in during the year, and we don't know with what we're opening.
Okay.
So it's not... Yeah. The problem is, it's hard to explain because it's never been done before. How does a restaurant turn into something that's not a restaurant but also has a restaurant outlet?
Absolutely.
How do you become a creative brain that uses restaurant knowledge and creativity to have impact in the food world? You know, I can tell you, and I haven't told this to any media outlet yet, but in 27, 28, and 29, it will be a trilogy, a menu trilogy. Each year will be open for 3 months. Each year, we will attack the year of 2070.
As a point of reference.
As a point of reference. So if you study today, where is the world of food going?
Mm-hmm.
There are many avenues. Some say robots will be making all our food. Others, you know, those are quite dystopian models. Others also say that most of our nutrition will come from just eating powders or bars.
Yeah.
Others say that there almost won't be any ingredients.
Only proteins which have been farmed or whatever.
Exactly. On the other hand, you also have others that are much more optimistic about a future that we can still turn the world of food into small, highly optimized, localized organic food systems, you know. And the technology is there to help this system thrive, not to remove this system, you know. So if you think of this, and as a creative person, as a food enterprise that wants to shape the future, by doing this, I believe we can peek into the future. We can try to envision three different models. One might be dystopian. Another one might be utopia. And a third one might be completely technological.
So you're open to explore all of those avenues?
Of course I am.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Even a dystopian one?
Even a dystopian one. Of course you have to, because if you don't, then you're not a realist.
Ah, so you don't want to push into a direction where you want it to be in 2070. You want to take the possibilities of 2070 and explore the different...
Yes, because if you explore it, then you can see, okay, I definitely do not want this.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards you can try to see, I've seen the future in a way. Of course, you can't really see the future. Get me?
I see what you mean.
But you are, along with everyone that works at the restaurant, plus all these new people that needs to work around us, which are people that are in sciences and technology and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Where all of us need to do this together and work on these new ideas together. And then hopefully you can see something positive and you can try to shift towards that.
Yes.
That is at least where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, all of this is dependent on us getting all the projects together. And this is very, very hard in a world that changes every 6 months right now. If you imagine pre-pandemic to where we are today, it's an unimaginably different world.
And, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Where it's going is like,
pre-pandemic,
nobody had heard of AI. The thought of war in Europe was impossible. A lockdown seemed completely
unrealistic.
All these movements that are happening, you know, it's a lot of change very quickly. And I think as an industry, as a restaurant industry, we are adapting to this all the time. We feel every single change constantly.
Especially in the pandemic, people started to realize how deeply enrooted a restaurant is in everything what happens in a society.
Of course.
No? I mean, a restaurant became a thing.
Of course. And I think in Germany and Denmark, we're in the same thing. Mm-hmm. People always say, restaurants are unnecessary, you mm-hmm. know, or why can you eat well when others don't? You know, mm-hmm. there's all these constant kind of Protestantic guilt.
Very Protestantic, yes.
Very Protestantic guilt.
In Denmark as well, right?
It's the same. People say that, but they have a nice home.
Yes.
And like, okay, but you have a nice home and people don't. Or you have a nice pillow, you know, because if it's only about constantly looking about what's necessary to live, we don't need much. But to feel alive, then you need culture.
People need culture, actually.
And you need to meet other people. You need to sit at a restaurant or a cafe and have a beer together and feel life. Mm. That's where you feel alive. Mm. And there's nothing wrong in wanting that. We need also, or else we turn into a jellyfish.
Mm.
So that definitely doesn't work. And we saw that during the pandemic.
What draw a little bit of criticism in the world of gastronomy was that you sort of said that the whole fine dining system as such is not sustainable.
Yes.
What did you do with this criticism?
I mean, I couldn't do anything because it just happened without me sort of what I said back then, which became the world of fine dining is unsustainable. I said, what we're doing at the restaurant is unsustainable.
Okay.
And that became the world of fine dining is unsustainable.
Yeah. Was it wrongly quoted?
I can't remember if it was quoted in the paper. I can't remember because I said, okay, we can't control this.
Yes,
this
but is just gonna. It wasn't what you wanted to say.
Of course
actually.
Not. Okay. Because, you know, I think in general, our industry is a very tough industry.
Mm-hmm.
And what does sustainable mean in the industry? Some people will look at it differently than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I know I want an organization where people can live and work for a lifetime, to be in the cutting edge. I want to be an organization where people can also afford to live and work in the restaurant industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it doesn't happen a lot in our industry.
It's true.
So, you know, on one hand, I was like, okay, this is going to happen. I can't control it. This is not what I meant. But on the other hand, when I saw how upset the industry became about it, I was also a little bit, are we in the same industry at the same time? You can't say that our industry is just perfect, you know, and it's taking care of its people and everyone is growing to be 58 years old, working in a kitchen and having, you know, most people leave before they're 35 still. And so I felt it both ways. I felt I was trying to make a reference to how it's going for us.
Mm-hmm.
The way we're working is not sustainable for what we want.
Mm-hmm.
That became fine dining is unsustainable. It was also, you have to remember, it was a point in time where there was so much criticism on fine dining in general.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It was already a little bit cooking.
It was boiling everywhere. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there was a sort of a small revolution happening.
Yeah.
And that became the moment that got used to say, oh, fine dining is unsustainable.
And fine dining is dead became sort of a refrain, which a lot of people and food magazines were starting to say, right? Like, fine dining restaurants are dead because Noma closes down.
I think fine dining is definitely not dead. I don't think it will ever die. But like anything, we need to adapt and push ourselves into modern times. I don't know how it is in Germany, but I assume it's the same here, that there's a lack of staff. Less and less Absolutely. People are actually going to culinary colleges.
Yes, it's the case as well here.
It's the case.
There are even classes being deleted.
Deleted. Yeah. It's an industry where people are actively declining to enter more and more so.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things in society that are the reasons for this, but there's also reasons in the industry for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we as an industry lift ourselves up and become modernized, not just leaders, but also organizations. I think there are two things here that are, one is a low-hanging fruit we can do ourselves. That is, how do you lead? How do you choose to lead? That you can adapt yourself.
Yes, okay, I see. So you say, all right, I change a little bit the system, the existing system. I don't really change the system as such. So I remain, for example, being a restaurant, but I change the way I lead.
Yes.
So, okay. Yeah.
You choose yourself. You can actively say, from tomorrow on, I'm going to try to be a much better leader. I'm going to read new books. I'm going to take a course.
I'm going to be nice to everyone.
I'm going to try to really be a different. That's up to you to work on yourself personally. The thing that's much harder is an industry where the finances are so tight.
It was even at Noma's.
It still is, and it even was at Noma.
Yeah.
Of course. Why should Noma be different than here in Germany?
One could say because it's so hyped, because you're all the times you're booked out.
Yes, but the more you have that, also the more, you know.
I mean, no, everybody knows that there is a lot of stuff at Noma.
Sure.
There is a lot.
I can tell you, and this is no secret because it's on the Danish public media every year. All Danish companies, they are public. You can go on a website and you can find the profits for a company. And our average profit is 3 and has been for 22 years.
3 means
3%.
All right.
3% profits.
Okay.
So
yeah,
I mean,
no, there is nothing to.
No. I think most companies they would be like, okay, you're in survival mode.
Yeah.
But we've had a lot of fun, so it's not sometimes. Most of the times when we do a pop up, some of these things they're also very expensive. The profit is the experience. The profit is learning new things.
So a pop up financial way is not the most interesting.
That is the opposite.
It's the opposite. All right. Yeah. So you kind of invest even in a.
Or it's like two times we lost a little bit. The rest of them we're around zero.
All right.
Yeah. When you do a pop up.
Yeah.
But so the low hanging fruit is that as a leader you can actively tell yourself, I can do something tomorrow myself to be a better leader, to inspire the team better. But I have to do the work. I actually have to read and pick up the phone and call someone, somebody you admire, and say, can you help me? Hey, how do you do it?
Yeah.
You know, these are things I've done myself. They actually do work. And then the more difficult one is, how do you create strong organizations? Because that will need capital, and in an industry where money is very, 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 very tight, it's hard to imagine how to find 20% more revenue or 30% more revenue. It is really, really hard, because we're also in an industry where I would assume it's the same here. If the restaurant number one in Düsseldorf suddenly raises the price 35%, that restaurant will come under a lot of scrutiny.
Yeah, of course.
And the guests will say, what are you doing? And so on and so forth. So for that reason, that's the harder one to solve. How do you become a modern organization? And so you need to figure out, how do you also find new revenues?
So you opted for both, actually, for both fruits, the low-hanging fruit and the other.
Yes, of course. I think you have to. If you want to see yourself by 2070 still in existence, still being creative on the cutting edge, you have to take the chance.
You have to find new ways of revenue, which in your opinion doesn't necessarily mean to shut down the restaurant for half of the year.
Say that again, I don't understand.
Because you choose to close the restaurant and then you will open it on specific circumstances. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that people who have a restaurant should think about the same thing, to not all the time having the restaurant open?
Well, it depends, of course. For us, it's a model that I think can work.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we can find this way of generating revenue outside a restaurant, it can really help. It can feed into this creative system.
And maybe a restaurant is maybe it's outdated to see a restaurant as something which is permanently here and permanently open from 9 in the morning till 11 in the evening. I don't know. No, I'm just
a type of restaurant like Noma, I can't see that being something that in these type also, I mean, listen, this is not the reason we did it, but if you imagine how the news cycle is running.
Mm-hmm.
10, 15 years ago, somebody brought me a book called The New New.
Mm-hmm.
It was to illustrate that before 30 years ago, when something was new, it was new for a while, maybe for half a year, for a year. But then it came the new new, meaning you're new, yes, but there's this new here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
the news never stopped. And then
how many new news cycles does exist?
Yeah.
And so in a place where people are constantly looking for the next thing, and people are invited to go all over the world to test and check out things, when you are in a restaurant like ours, that is not a everyday type of restaurant where it's also, you know, it's not about having a place where people can come every day and feel
exactly,
you know, have a meal and bring your family, or you can come on Saturdays and then you can have a birthday. It's not that type of restaurant we have. Those places should be open every day. The question is, how will they stay open by 2070 as well? What's going to happen there? You know, with technology that spills into robots? Is your robot going to make your omelet in 15 years from now for breakfast at your favorite restaurant? Are they going to be peeling your potatoes and cooking your fish? It sounds pretty boring, right? But it's not unrealistic.
It's not unrealistic. And I'm just asking myself, is this the dystopian version or not?
I think a mix.
Yeah.
I think a mix. I think food and restaurants, they are analog inherently.
It's an, I mean, restaurant is an analog experience,
yes,
right?
It's
and because you said you don't want to QR code.
Exactly. QR code, and I think we will need it in a digitalized world, analog experiences, we're searching for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We just spoke about that online sales are dropping in some areas, and that's because people want to go to a store and actually touch things and say hello to a store clerk. But I in that sense, I think restaurants are kind of safe. But on the other hand, if you were looking at an industry that needs modernization, it needs more capital to modernize its organizations. Hey, what if there were some robots that worked all night and you came in the morning and...
And the boring stuff has been done. I mean...
And, you know, when I speak to other chefs like that, they will say, oh, yes, but how will the young people learn? I see the young people are not even learning now because they're not really there, you know? It's just a change. And so in that sense, it could be a positive thing, you know, that you could have some machinery that actually takes care of parts of the work, but the real cooking is still a human experience and the service is a human experience.
Yeah.
But when you will be going to airports and all these type of restaurant experiences, I have no doubt the future will be very automated and there will be computers everywhere. I was just in Los Angeles. There's a Tesla diner where everything is robotic already.
And automatic cars as well. You drove one?
No, because you have to have I saw them all everywhere.
Okay.
I saw them everywhere.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
And I saw the deliveries, you know, the small wagons that delivers.
Mm.
I think it's inevitable that more of this will happen, including in our industry. And then I think we just have to already now imagine, well, how would you like your restaurant to adapt it, you know, and be practical about it?
Is it maybe as well because we're living in at the beginning with the AI, with a lot of new things happening, at the beginning of sort of a new era, that you feel the need to care about the future? Because I don't know if you would have felt the need 20 years ago
no,
to project yourself in 2070.
You would have. No, I have always felt a need and a wish to work with something that has impact. Also 20 years ago. And when you look at 20 years ago, of course, the world was very different. And you're right. Perhaps because the world has turned so immediate and so fast, it's like an Instagram swipe, you know, that you're constantly just looking at what's tomorrow or you're worried about what's the next 6 months. You can't even imagine 5 years from now, or you don't even plan. Most people, when I ask them, where do you think you want to be in 20 years? And they will say, I have no idea. I didn't think about it.
But 20 years ago, you knew more or less what will be in 6 months. Today, this has changed, right?
Right now, yes. After a pandemic?
After pandemic. Let's talk about after pandemic.
After the pandemic, it's been, I mean, we don't know what's happening in 6 months. We're just hoping some positive things will happen, and we don't, you know, but it is a strange time.
But with projecting yourself in 2017, taking this as a point of reference, you mentioned the realistic, you mentioned the dystopian way, you mentioned also the optimistic way. I'm under the impression that you have an inherent belief in optimistic.
Yes, I am.
Is this right?
It is. Because the opposite, where does that lead you?
I think if you have the opposite, you're not...
It leads you nowhere
good.
It leads
you nowhere.
Nowhere good.
It's not constructive. It's
bullshit. Mm. And I have had that since I was young, this optimistic. I grew up, you know, my family are Albanians. Mm. And from ex-Yugoslavia, my father came to Denmark. And I remember being brought from Yugoslavia to Denmark because of the war. It was terrible times. Terrible, terrible, terrible times. I remember them as much worse than now.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
Albania was a dictator.
Well, our family, they lived in an Albanian community in Macedonia.
In Macedonia, all right.
A part of Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, most Albanians left because it was a communist dictatorship. Yeah. But I remember there were much worse times. Mm-hmm. People were desperate and people lost their mind. And I had family members that. It was just terrible times. Anyone who was a part of Yugoslavia will tell this to you. And I think of why, is that I'm always trying to be hopeful and optimistic. I think it comes back from that period that you realize freezing and spiraling into only finding things that are wrong will not get you anywhere good.
Also, didn't you prove with the last 20, 21 years with NOMA that you can actually initiate a lot of change?
You can.
I mean, it's what actually, let's say,
I always
let's
tell
say
the
that
team.
NOMA was one of the most, is one of the most impactful restaurants in the world in the last 50 or 100 years.
And we wish to be more. Because I think it's positive. Food is the most important thing on earth. How we eat, what we eat, with whom we eat, how we produce our food. All these aspects are more or less one-to-one in how healthy the planet is, in how healthy we are as people. Mm-hmm. If you're lonely and you don't eat out with friends, if you eat very unhealthy, you're an unhealthy person. Mm-hmm. If you eat healthy and you're out with people, and the products are grown in a healthy way. I believe more or less, food is the answer.
Yes.
To every problem. So we wish to continue with that. It fuels me, and I think, and I tell my kids, and I tell even the team members this. First, you have to imagine your future, and then create it. It's as simple as that, you know, but you have to be able to imagine it. And that's what we're going into now, is trying to imagine and work on the future. And then see if we can somehow help create it. It will be in a small way, of course, but why not try?
So the future of, let,
Uh-oh.
Du suchst einen neuen Job? Dann nichts wie hin zu Chefs in Downstage. Dort werden gerade
that
die
is actually pretty
Arbeit
funny. Yeah, we you should will, use that as a...
We won't cut this.
Nichts wie hin. Chefs in town.
Sorry.
She was talking about our new job?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Du suchst ein neuer Job?
Exactly.
That's funny. Yeah, I will have to say, when I was young, every Danish kid had German in school.
This is why I actually wanted to ask you.
Yeah, understand quite a bit. I hated German because of the grammar.
How much of what you told me how the future of Noma and René Redzepi's role in it is going to be, how much of a black on white concept is this?
It's a movable feast.
Yes.
It's nothing is ever black or white with me. Also, of course, nothing is ever black or white. And I don't even believe in black or white. I think it's a terrible place to be. The only thing that's black or white are like doing terrible things to others and stuff like that.
Yes.
You know, there are some boundaries. Yes. But in terms of listening to others, being open to fresh ideas, being able to change if something else happens, you have to be adaptable at all times. This plan that we have, it's what we're going for. It is very hard to pull off. It will be dependent on large-scale collaborations with universities, with big organizations, with scientists. All this need capital, so we're also out finding capital at the same time. It's very, very hard. And then at the same time, every 6 to 12 months, the world seems to be in a completely different place that changes the game all the time. But I feel very certain in where we're going. The question is, will we fulfill it completely at first? We might have to adapt, you know? And I've also told the team, in 2020, after the first lockdown, if none of this works out, we'll just open as a restaurant again. You know, that will be the end result. But we have to try this to see if we can create a new type of food organization where food, flavor, deliciousness, ideas in food can actually, us as a team, our network, our imagination can be helpful and productive for food in a different way than serving 42 guests every night.
I would say
we are moving away from a restaurant type organization into a food innovation organization.
Okay.
But restaurant, it's run by restaurant people. Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Yes.
Because in the big world of food, you will have often big organizations and they're run by engineers or by business people. They might have one chef. A good example is Impossible Foods. I don't know if in Germany.
No, but we know about it.
You know about it. And 10 years ago, the whole world thought we were going to be eating all sorts of meat variants.
Yeah.
And millions, if not billions of dollars were put into these type of new fake meats.
Yeah.
300 engineers are working on altering the protein.
With I don't know how many millions or even billions in investments.
Sure. And it was blowing up, and now it's completely deflated because at the end of the day, it doesn't taste good.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we find ourselves in a society where we need to have something just to survive, then we'll eat it. As long as we're not there, we will only eat things that are delicious.
And I don't know if it's only about the taste. Maybe taste isn't everything. Maybe people.
If that thing was so delicious,
yes,
people would eat it.
You think so?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
If it's like, oh, this is so delicious.
Yeah.
People eat delicious things.
Yeah.
They do. I mean, we all are told that meat is so bad for us, but we still eat it. Yeah, there are so many topics in food that are controversial. People get so excited and so unhappy. And, you know, because people believe in what I eat is the right thing. But mostly, I think people also think, hey, don't tell me what to think.
Yes, it becomes more and more important, I think.
Yes,
now
don't do like this. You're not you're not like a preacher with a finger like this. And I believe that too. I think it should be inspiration, and flavor is a deciding factor. Yeah. If a bowl of spinach tastes as great as a beef, people are like, oh, I love this bowl of spinach too. I'll have that some more.
Yeah, even it's interesting because I always thought that it's not only about the taste, but I think that you're right. When something is truly, truly delicious,
you accept it. You go for it. Of course, there's also marketing and there's also doing the right thing.
Yes, it's the moral.
The moral dilemma.
Of eating.
Yeah. Yeah. But pre-pandemic, that has become less.
Yes.
No doubt. People are like, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
And this whole green wave of not eating meat, lentil burgers and all this, that has slowed down quite a bit. But I believe most of it is slowed down because it doesn't taste good enough. Mm-hmm. That's my point.
Do you think it will taste better in the future, or do you think this hype is just over because
it's not over. It's going to come back.
It's going to come back.
It's going to come back. I am very certain of this because this agriculture system we have is a system that's under great pressure. Mm. The way we've adapted.
Unsustainable.
It's probably unsustainable.
Let's not start this again.
Let's not start this one. But it's super problematic. Mm. It needs to modernize itself and adapt to the realities of what's going on in the world with a climate that's shifting, natural disasters. We have a huge loss of diversity. Insects are disappearing on Earth. You know, there's a lot of things. Yeah. And most of it is down to how we grow the food.
Yeah.
So a change is coming. And that will also probably be a change in how we eat. But, you know, we're not ready for it yet.
You sure?
I'm sure. I think... Sometimes, you know, I many years ago before the pandemic, I was in Turkey and we were speaking about this, and mm-hmm. people said, "Oh, what should happen?" And I said, "The thing that will happen is when I think the disaster needs to be almost as big as the pandemic,
in order to step
out of this thing and say, okay, now suddenly worldwide there's a hailstorm where the hail are the size of buses or something." Yeah. And they can say, all right, we need a change, you know. Perhaps that will my point is also it needs strong, decisive government reform if we are to truly change something. And that is very, very, very problematic.
Because you don't see the
nobody can agree with each other.
Yeah.
And everybody's just worried about the next cycle of election, you know? Yeah. And even, I'm assuming it's the same here in Germany, even within the different parties, there are fractions and they don't agree. And it just seems like, okay, we need a change and there needs to be a dramatic transformation of the agricultural system in most of Europe. We've had a system where we used to have a lot of smallhold and that got changed into co-ops. Maybe it's the same in Germany, where they all feed into large-scale co-ops.
Mm.
And so everything is produced in the same way. It's been very productive. Now there's an environmental damage that needs to be corrected, so we need to grow in a different way. And it's crazy to ask of farmers that they have to pay for this. You know, they were told in the 60s, change into this, and now we need to change into something different. So it needs government subsidies. And by the way, agriculture is already being heavily subsidized.
It's already heavily.
In a different way.
Yeah, yeah. But in a way that is not, I say it, not sustainable, in my opinion.
You can say
right?
it.
I can say it. but it has been, it becomes more and more expensive for us as a society because it's funded to make a lot of damage, which we will have to repair in a couple of years or generations.
No doubt. Everything comes at a cost. Every time something is very cheap with food, something is paying for that. It could be
Euro
a tree.
50 for a flower, for flower bag is, I will pay the price later.
You will, or the tree, or the tree. Lake is paying the price.
Yeah.
I mean, we can see it now, the food prices are going up. I don't know if it's happening in Germany yet.
At least in Austria, it's going like this. It's,
okay. Same thing insane. In Denmark.
Yeah.
And we need to get used to that.
Mm.
I don't think it's going back down.
I don't think so as well.
I don't think so.
Maybe stops at a certain point because it cannot go like this for the next 10 years.
Of course not.
We will pay €5 for 250 grams of butter. But
maybe that is the true... We have to ask ourselves, what is the true cost
of
our food?
Of course. But then everybody needs more money as well, right?
Yeah, or different priorities.
Different priorities.
That's a reality as well. How do you travel? What clothes do you buy? How often do you need a new phone?
Yeah.
Perhaps we're all spending that more on what we eat in the future.
Or the governmental subsidies go there where you have a sustainable system.
Yeah, probably. So, and hopefully.
So €2.50 from the €5 butter comes from the subsidies.
Yeah.
So it can be produced in a sustainable way.
Yeah.
And I, as a consumer, pay the other €2.50.
Yeah. That would be, I would support something like that. How it's going to work, I don't know.
Probably super naive. But, yeah.
But I think you have to be a little naive.
Yes, right.
If you don't, you will never believe in anything. You know, I think...
Wasn't it super naive to make
everyone always tells you, just be realistic, only think of this. Yeah. You will never get anywhere. You just stay the same. You're frozen.
That's actually, I think, maybe even a beautiful last question. Was it naive to open and to create Noma?
No, it was not.
But it was bold.
It was bold, but it was more hard than it was bold, I think.
Why was it hard?
If you go back, it's almost 22 years, and I spent a year working on Noma before. So it's 23 mm-hmm. years of my life. And we were a very small restaurant with a very low budget. There were 6 gas burners. There was no guest toilets. They have to use the guest toilets in the museum that was next door. In the opening time, we had a restaurant, then where our lounge ended up being. That was a cafe. We served breakfast, lunch, dinner, sandwiches. Upstairs, we had a canteen for the whole building. I would start my day for the first 7-8 years cutting a salami. Mm-hmm. And I would put them up on platters. We were 6 people full time when Noma opened, between front, back of the house, and also dishwashers. I would open and close a restaurant myself. We were open 6 days a week, lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
My wife that's here with me, we have 20th anniversary. For the first 7-8 years of our life, most days I would come home, she would be sleeping. Mm-hmm. And when I woke up, she was sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So
you barely...
I wouldn't see her sometimes for 3-4 days straight, yeah, because it was just work. And the boldness back then of saying, let's open a restaurant, focus more on local products, it was not so bold. It became more bold because we developed it and we found all these ideas and it became more bold. But mostly it was hard. And I think...
I understand.
That is the biggest thing I tell when we have all these Massimo Bottura, look. When I tell all these young sous chefs and chefs that are leaving the restaurant, they're opening places, I just tell them it's going to be very hard. Very, 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 very hard. Many problems, so many ups and downs, so many things that don't work. And if you don't have an optimistic mindset...
That's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, then it will be very hard.
If you have?
Then you find solutions.
Okay.
And you're curious. Are you going to speak with Massimo now? You will see.
In a couple.
He's going to be like a bee that is looking for honey, you know? But that's another person that's inherently optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
I think... optimistic and curious, being curious. I think those are And perhaps curious is the most important thing. Because if you're curious, you're curious towards other people.
It's not an inherently in curiosity. Isn't there always a little percentage of inherent optimism?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. If you're curious, then you're open.
Yeah.
You're open to other people. Yeah. You're open to new ideas.
Yeah.
You're open to learning. When you see things, you're curious. Oh, what is it actually? Mm. You know, it's not just moving on by quickly.
Mm.
I think curiosity is sort of also the antidote to negativity and to depression.
Yes, it's being alive as well.
Yeah, it is. No? But you can train yourself to being curious. Even if you're not naturally curious, it's something you can train yourself.
But you didn't have to. To be honest,
no. I think probably I went
through. Do you have to?
I probably went through the thing with Yugoslavia, with the whole war and my family, and that forced me into being a more curious, positive person. Because it was very negative back then, very bleak, a bleak time.
That formed you as well, apparently.
Of course, If you are able to turn it into something.
Mm.
Positive, then it's a good thing. But, you know, it was a... I mean, I know you have many former Yugoslavians in Germany and probably in Austria.
Of course, due to the geographical proximity as
well. Yeah, of course. And you will find many my age and older that lived through it.
Mm.
And you'll find their kids as well that probably haven't lived through it, but they've seen their parents.
My grandparents fled from Yugoslavia as well in the Second World War, but...
Still, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, but still, it's in the family biography, right?
Yeah. It stays.
It stays.
It stays with you somehow. It takes generations to wash it away.
Mm.
So I think that is the main moment where I became more of a positive person. Because I feel like I can remember telling myself, because the opposite leads to nowhere.
Mm. What's the alternative? If you have it in your mind and reflect it, maybe it leads you automatically to value the curiosity, the nature of curiosity.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I can still be negative. And I can also be, you know, you wake up and read the news and you're like, oh, fuck.
We all have bad days, right?
What happened today? What did this crazy guy say over there? And so on and so forth. No, I'm still very, very hopeful. And this transformation we're going to go through is very difficult. It will be difficult. Mm-hmm. But if it works out, wow.
Let's see in
2-3 years.
In 2-3 years?
In 2-3 years that we'll have much better clarity on where we are. I might be back here and we are a la carte restaurant open 6 days a week to survive. And I am running the meat section, you know?
Yeah.
Or we might have transformed and
everything goes by plan more or less.
Yeah, by plan until something happens and you have to change again.
Yeah.
You know? So we'll see.
Thank you so much,
René,
for this deep dive into what moves you, what pushes you, and for your openness.
Yeah, thank you.